Hello and welcome to this week's Wikipedia Wanderers. We're talking former Monaco, Nagoya Grampus 8 manager, and the first foreign manager to win the League and Cup double. Who may that be?
Hello everybody and welcome to Wikipedia Wanderers and Josh. It's a manager today. A manager who, well, where does he rate in terms of your favourites? Not in the league, obviously a very good manager. Where's he rating your favourites?
Do you know, I'm a fan. I really do like this man. Arsene Wenger, yeah.
Surprised.
And it's probably because I'm looking back to the time when they played really, really good football. And the kind of the Perez, Lundberg, Henri, Bergkamp, Gilberto, that kind of era. Because it really did tail off a little bit towards the end and kind of top half finishes, like kind of 6th, 7th, 8th, that kind of thing, which is, I don't really want to remember.
Yeah.
But style of football was excellent for a time. And also, a little bit of bite. A little bit of Cindy Uffies.
There was a very, very ill-disciplined team at times, wasn't it? But Arsene Wenger had like three stages, didn't he? He had the team he inherited from George Graham, which was really solid defensively. Then he had his free-flowing football team, and then he had the Wenger out phase, I think we can call it. It's interesting to understand how he like sort of transitioned between them. But let's look at the early days to start with. Like, what's your first memory of Arsene Wenger? Like, what do you remember when he was appointed?
No one really. It was a bit left field because he's coming from Nagoya Grampus 8. So he spent 1 year in Japan before all this. And we weren't probably as well read back then because what's that? That is 1996 he joined. So we're age 10.
Yeah.
It was kind of like, oh, who is this man? And it was all a bit different. This is kind of very early Premier League in terms of foreign imports.
That's
so
true,
it was just
yeah.
kind of bit like, oh, I'm going to go and try and find the Premier League season, just the general season, 96, and see what other managers in that list at that time.
Okay. All right. Interesting. But I mean, the Nagoya Grampus 8, just while you're looking at that, is a bit, even that's a bit left field to go from Monaco to Nagoya Grampus 8 as a manager and then back to Europe. It seems very bizarre.
Yeah, because he had a good stint at Monaco. So Monaco is so crazy in terms of players he had. So he joins and signs Glenn Hoddle on a free from Tottenham.
Nice.
Which kind of just, I can't quite get my head around. He's got a player which I'm not too familiar with, Mark Hatley. Player you know?
No.
Mark Hatley left Milan to join Monaco and was encouraged to learn that fellow Englishmen would play on the same side. So Mark Hatley, do you have any, that have got any name recognition with you?
No, not that I can think of. Not at all.
Tall man, bigger than Christian Daly, 6'3". So he had youth career Nottingham Forest, Coventry City, loan to Detroit Express, which I'm going to guess is America, when he's 19, okay. Portsmouth, then goes straight from Portsmouth to Milan, plays there a couple of seasons, he's a striker, and it's Monaco for a couple of seasons, comes back to Britain with Rangers, then to the Queens, Park Rangers, Leeds, back to Rangers, Hull, Ross County, 500 appearances, 182 goals, 32 appearances for England, 9 goals. Hold on a minute, I'm just scrolling down, I just saw the name Ayrton Senna. Okay. So he transferred to Milan for 1 million, scored a decisive and historic match-winning goal in the Milan derby. Ayrton Senna lived in the apartment below him, and Boris Becker lived next door during his time in Milan. Senna played five-a-side football with Hatley. There you go.
Amazing. What a tangent. What a tangent.
But Hoddle's got Hatley, he's got Hoddle. He also signs to first club, his first European club, George Weah, at Monaco.
Amazing.
Also signed Jurgen Klinsmann there.
I was just thinking, didn't he have a really young Thierry Henry at Monaco?
Later on he did, yes. Yeah. So win with Monaco, won the Coupe de France in 1991. That should give us a little look at their side, their 11. 1991 Coupe de France, so Monaco versus Marseille. Who do we have in here? We have Claude Puel, a right back. Emmanuel Petit, a left back.
Okay.
Yuri Djurkaev, George Weah, Ramon Diaz, I said Argentine, don't know him, and Youssef Fofana is a Ivorian forward, not, I don't know. Marseille, we've detached from Marseille. Basil Boli's playing. Chris Waddle was playing. Jean-Pierre Papa, Abedi Pele, and I thought Dragan Stojkovic is playing, who came on from them. But then I'm pretty sure, yeah, he then joins. So the player came on in that 1991 French Cup final is Dragan Stojkovic, and he then transfers to Nagoya Grand Prix 8. And Wenger made him there. But do you know who retired the year before Wenger joined Grand Prix 8?
Gary Lineker.
Gary Lineker.
Arsene Wenger's really old.
Age 73 currently.
Yeah. I mean, I was just flicking through the Monaco bit. The end of it is interesting. As a result of his work at Monaco, Wenger was sought by German club Bayern Munich, who wanted him to be their next manager. But Monaco refused to let him leave. Wenger chose to stay and then got sacked when they were 17th in the table.
It's like a month later.
Then moved to Grand Prix 8 after doing some work for FIFA, attending lots of conferences and being a member of the football governing body's technical committee for analysing the 1994 World Cup, which is interesting because he's now working for FIFA again, right?
Yeah, so he's always been in the pocket of FIFA there, hasn't he?
Yeah.
96-97 Premier League, when Arsene Wenger is there, he is one of two non-UK or Irish managers. The other one is Chelsea manager Ruud Gullit. Everybody else, we've got Brian Little at Villa, we've got Tony Parks, Gordon Strachan, Jim Smith, Dave Watson, George Graham, Martin O'Neill, Roy Evans, Alex Ferguson, Brian Robson, Kenny Dalglish, Dave Bassett, David Pleat, Graham Souness, Peter Reid, Jerry Francis, Harry Redknapp, Joe Kinnear. Wow.
That is a dearth of football managers other than Fergie and Wenger, probably.
Who's the Chiefs up there? So, yeah. George Graham obviously previously had at Leeds. So what about, so he moves over to Grand Prix 8 and wins the Emperor's Cup and the Japanese Super Cup. So I'm going to obviously look at the 1995 Emperor's Cup, see who's got to playing there. No, this is not something we has got some name recognition here. So it's got a Brazilian Torres, a Frenchman Durix, Stojkovic, who I mentioned. Everybody else is Japanese. Is there anyone else, any of the Japanese players? No, this is 96 Japan. It's not, maybe King Kazu might be still be around. Huistra, Pieter Huistra is on the other side, a Dutchman. Managed by Wim Jansen.
That's a name I recognise.
Wim Jansen, Feyenoord, Washington Diplomats. Oh God, is there anything better than American football team names? It's a bit like English county cricket, like Kent Spitfires. It's a bit American in that sense, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
But I do love US. And Ajax, no, I don't think we... You managed Celtic in 97-98, Wim Jansen.
No, that's probably not what I'm probably thinking of a different Jansen. But
yeah.
Wenger, his methods had desired effects. Nagoya Grampus won 17 of their following 27 games to finish runners-up in 1995. He received the J-League Manager of the Year award in 1995. Stojkovic claimed the best player of the league in the honours. 1996 guided them to the Emperor Cup, as you've just said. Interesting, though, he was approached midway through 1996 by his former club Strasbourg, where he played as a player, and he turned them down because he was early been approached by Arsenal. David Dean had remained in contact with Wenger after their first meeting and frequently sent him videotapes of matches to garner his opinion. He was my personal pundit, the vice chairman recalled.
We expect those to be the Arsenal matches, and he's like giving his review of how they're playing as a club and keeping his interest, or is it just
opposition?
Watch his game last night.
Is it like give us a scout report or something?
Yeah.
And then, yeah, with concerns over George Graham's successor, Bruce Rioch, they were more open-minded about hiring him since his stint in Japan.
Part of his reason he left France was due to the bribery and corruption that had been in France, because that's when Marseille were found guilty of match-fixing in 94.
Okay, that makes a bit, but still, it makes a little bit more sense, but not enough to go from like France to Japan. He must have seen something in that Grand Prix 8.
Yeah, so deal. He attended the last match where Gary Lineker played. I think he was just fascinated with going abroad and speaking to his family and going, yeah, you know what, why not?
Okay.
Funnily enough, so Stojkovic, who he managed, he actually then became the Grand Prix 8 manager to win them their first league title. Later on.
Nice. That's pretty cool. That is very nice. Bruce Rioch gets sacked and they appoint Arsene. They appoint David Dean's personal scout and Arsene Wenger. Wenger gets the job. Yeah.
So Rioch has just signed Dennis Bergkamp, I think, in the summer. So Bergkamp wasn't a Wenger signing.
No.
Rioch, it seemed to become untenable with the relationship, and Rioch sacked a few weeks before the end of the season to have Stuart Houston, Pat Rice in temporary charge. But Johan Cruyff was apparently one of the favourites to take over, would have been quite crazy.
Yeah.
That's a really big, like, from going for someone who no one really knows. There was speculation about who was going to be the next manager, but then Arsenal actually signed Patrick Vieira and Remy Gard before Wenger had officially joined.
Right.
And it's kind of like, oh, the cat's out of the bag here.
And I guess it's that early point in Wenger, isn't it? He's the one that's credited for changing the culture of professional football in terms of drinking and eating better and the exercise and that sort of, I don't want to say scientific approach, but it was more scientific towards players' nutrition and fitness.
Yeah, because so they started, see, the pre-seasons used to go to Austria for pre-seasons, and here Ray Parler says, the English lads used to go to the pub, the French lads used to go to the coffee shop and smoked. He's quoted as saying, how are we going to win the league this year? We're all drunk and they're all smoking. Let's have a look at the season. So that 96-97 season is when he takes over. So I'm going to the Arsenal seasons. But the season before, they'd finished fifth. We're in the midst of Ian Wright being top scorer. Ian Wright's been top scorer since the 1991 season. So top scorer every year, still top scorer. So 96-97. Rioch leaves, Wenger joins. Transfers in. Valur Gíslason, undisclosed. I mean, I presume that's a youth signing. Did he go on to do anything? Valur Gíslason. Oh, this is a small page. He made no appearances, loaned to Brighton, and then is very much based in Scandinavia. Made 5 appearances for Iceland. Okay. John Lukic, remember John Lukic?
Yeah, goalkeeper.
Arsenal. Goalkeeper, signed from Leeds on a free. Remy Gard from Strasbourg on a free. Patrick Vieira, $3.5 million from
Milan?
Yes, it was. Talk to me, Patrick Vieira's career. What you're running through from start to finish, what you got?
Oh my word, start to finish. I don't know the start. I think the earliest I know Vieira is Milan. Milan, mm-hmm. Arsenal, City?
You've missed a couple there. So, starts off at Cannes, Milan for a season, but only appeared twice in the league.
Oh, okay.
Same injury, yeah. And then Arsenal, then Juventus for a season.
Yeah.
Into Milan for 4 seasons, and then Man City for a season, which is what he's somewhat then was attached to Man City after that. So he managed the early development squad, managed New York City, managed Nice, so separated, managed Nice for a while, and now is obviously at Crystal Palace. Also signed Nicolas Anelka for an undisclosed fee. So that's when he decides to move on John Hartson, because he's like, I've got Nicolas Anelka now. And so who else have they got? They obviously have the solid back four that time. So yeah, we've got Seaman, Dixon, Winterburn, Bold, Adams, David Platt is in the squad. Paul Merson, Bergkamp's there, Keown's still there, Parler. Paul Dickov just went at the start of that season.
Paul Dickov was at Arsenal?
Yeah.
God, I don't remember that.
Yeah. I remember him in his City shirt is how I remember Paul Dickov.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I remember.
And he was there for, that was his youth club, so he was there for until he was 24, 22 appearances, 4 goals, so it's kind of like never made a breakthrough. But you were right, yeah. Most of his career appearances, 158 at Man City, then Leicester, Blackburn, back to Man City again, actually.
So just looking here, like the early success, he raided old club Monaco for Christopher Ray, who I think we've spoken about before on the podcast in previous seasons. Jules Grimandi and Emmanuel Petit joins. So that's when he signs in Petit.
Because Petit and Grimandi were actually defenders.
Yeah.
They could play as midfielders. And they did. But we know them both as midfielders, really, don't we?
Yeah, yeah. And then Overmars was bought from Ajax. Paul Merson moved in from Middlesbrough. It's just a sort of a who's who of that really good early success they had.
Because it is that second season is where they, so Wenger comes in, has a season, and they finish third, and then the next season is where they win the league and win the FA Cup, I think.
Yeah, he won the double, didn't he? In 98 he won the double, because that was the year that the book, it probably is in here actually, yes, there it is. Such was the likelihood of Manchester United going on to retain the title in 98. Bookmaker Fred Dunn paid out on punters with two months of the season left. Arsenal steadily closed the gap, set up a title clash between themselves and Man United. In the lead up to the game, Wenger maintained it was possible for Arsenal to win the league, stating 2 or 3 weeks ago the title was just a dream for us, and people laughed when we said we could still do it. Overmars scored in a 1-0 win for Man United. Arsenal then beat Everton, secured the title, and then won the double, beating Newcastle in the 1998 FA Cup final.
Yes, Nicholas Nel scored. I remember that.
I'm going to have a look at it, Josh. Test your knowledge. What was the final score?
2-0.
It was 2-0, yeah. Correct.
Someone and Nicholas Nelka.
It was. Ooh, yeah. Anelka got the second in the 69th minute, lad.
is it a rogue Englishman, like a Merson or a Platt or something? I don't know.
Nah, Mark Overmars. Mark Overmars.
Okay.
Arsenal starting lineup, which is a bit. Wow. I mean, the first six names are English. So David Seaman, Lee Dixon, Martin Keown, Tony Adams, Nigel Winterburn, Ray Parlour, Patrick Vieira and Petit in the central midfield, Overmars on the left, and Anelka partnering Christopher Ray up front. Alex Maniger was the backup goalkeeper on the bench. Steve Bold was on the bench. David Platt, Gilles Grimondi and Ian Wright. Newcastle, this is an amazing team.
This is going to be so retro, is this?
Yeah. Shea Given in goal.
Yeah.
Who was the right back? Also played for Everton.
Pistone.
Yep, yeah, Pistone. Centre backs. What tip would you like? What hint if you feel like you
need nationalities, one? Please.
We'll have an Englishman and a Greek.
Nikos Stavizas and I don't know where he was a generic defender. Steve Howie,
centre back.
Yeah.
Left back, Nottingham Forest legend.
Oh, Stuart Pearce.
Right midfield, I thought this guy was a defender. English.
Warren Barton. Yeah, he's definitely a. Well, is that a doubling up? Is that one of the early a doubling up?
Against Overmars, that would have been. Yeah. So, two centre mids, both English. One of them, I only ever remember him playing for Newcastle. He was captain on the day. The other one missed the penalty for England against Argentina. David Batty in centre mid.
And Rob Lee.
Yep, playing alongside Rob Lee. Left midfield, Welsh club legend for Newcastle. Sadly, passed away too young.
Oh, Gary Speed.
Up front, absolute nutter that kicked the hoardings.
Murray Kitspire.
and goal scorer.
Alan Shearer.
Yeah. And then on the bench, Shaka Hislop, legend. Steve Watson, Philippe Albert, he that did the lob. John Barnes on the bench. And number 40, Andreas Anderson. Came on in the 73rd minute. He played for Milan, as apparently everyone does on this episode. Milan, 13 games, 1 goal. Newcastle, 27 games, 4 goals. Moved to AIK, 82 games, 25 goals. 43 caps for Sweden, 8 goals. Not a very good striker. Honestly, Josh, this guy's page is horrendous. Newcastle United. Anderson signed for Newcastle United in the English Premier League in January 98. He played in the FA Cup final. Newcastle lost to Arsenal. Unbelievable. Yeah.
Ian Rush played for Newcastle this time.
What?
Newcastle United route to the final. It said Ian Rush forced the ball over the line in the process, set a new goal scoring record, 43 goals in competition, unless he's playing for the other side.
Surely not.
Rush did not make the 16-man squad for Newcastle as he failed to recover from injury. Oh my God. So they've got Ian Rush, John Barnes and Alan Shearer in their midst.
Yeah, well, there you go. The 1998 FA Cup final. That and the Premier League was Wenger became the first foreign manager to ever win the double in England.
But Anelka doesn't stick around long, does he?
He doesn't. He was an enigma, wasn't he? Nicholas Anelka. Was always so good on football games, but you really couldn't keep him happy at all.
No. Yeah, so he goes, it was PSG, Arsenal, Real Madrid. Back to PSG, loan to Liverpool, Man City signing, Fenerbahce, Bolton, Chelsea, Shanghai, Shenhua, a loan to Juventus, that's escaped my memory, West Brom, which I think is also escaped my memory.
Yeah, no, I remember that. He got done for some sort of salute, didn't he, at West Brom?
Oh, did he?
I think so, yeah.
And Mumbai City, 69 caps for France, 14 goals. Now, I would say he's on the lowest kilter of players I expect to have a managerial career.
Yeah.
But he has. But he's been in China, player coach, Mumbai City, player manager, Lille youth team for 2 years, and sports director at Hayes. I'm not sure if he's still there. But I think Wenger wanted to partner Henri and Anelka. but didn't manage to.
No, it would have been deadly, that. That would have been, yeah, that would have been absolutely deadly. Yeah, because obviously he signed. Well, one thing you get through this page, well, I'm getting through this page in the early success bit, is obviously how much he depended on that defence he inherited. Because the transfers that are coming through are generally all attacking players, like Kanu, you've got, Sporting, Grimondi, Petit, and people like that. But Anelka, Ray, Overmars, Merson, who else did I just say? Thierry Henry, Kanu, Davor Suker joins. It's...
Yeah, I'm just fast because so I've got two memories, correct me if I'm wrong, and I think maybe I'm thinking there's one more, but failed European Cup finals. So we've got, first one I've gone to, 2000 UEFA Cup final. Do you remember where you lost against?
Oh, that was from the halfway line. What's it? Naeem from the halfway line. Wasn't it?
No, it wasn't. No, it was against Galatasaray, this one.
Oh, so no, I don't remember.
0-0 lost on penalties. So you're right. It's 2000, so 4 years after he's taken over. Back four, or back five, I'm going to keep it. Seaman, Dixon, Adams, Keown, Silvino's got into the side.
Right.
He gets displaced by Ashley Cole, but, you know, Parla, Petit, Vieira, Overmars, Henri, Burkamp. You look at that and think, how have Arsenal failed? Because that is close to peak Arsenal.
Yeah.
In the kind of memory, but you know, Galatasaray had Taffarel in goal, Georgi Popescu, Umut Davala, Georgi Hadji got sent off in the 94th minute. Hakan Şükür up front, Fatih Terim was the manager, but man of match, I suppose, is Claudio Taffarel.
Yeah. Yeah. Would he have been Brazil's number one at that point? No, surely not. Dida would have taken over by then, surely.
In France 98 would have been, 2 years before, would have been, it's probably transition time.
Yeah,
Taffarel would have been France 98, and I think 2002 would have been Dida. But on the bench we have Kanu, Suker, Stefan Moltz.
Don't recognise that name.
Oh, don't, not to be confused with Moritz Voltz.
That's who I was thinking of when you said Stefan Moltz. I was like, I definitely know a similar name. Moritz Voltz is who I was thinking.
Oleg Glushny, Jules Grimondi, Winterburn and Lukic.
Nice. This is interesting. Yeah, so August 1999, Anelka joined Madrid. Like, as you said, didn't keep him for very long. Wenger used portion of the proceeds generated through that sale to fund the Arsenal Training Centre, expressing his desire to establish a home away from Arsenal. Okay, he renewed his forward line by signing Suker and Henri. Henri joined after seven injury-interrupted months at Juventus for £11.5 million. It's just bonkers that it was £11.5 million. Like, how much would Henri be now in today's money?
Oh my goodness, it's kind of like Mbappe style, isn't it, I think?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. And obviously a trophy drought that continued up to 2001-02, wasn't it? Because 2001 they got beaten by Liverpool in the final.
Yeah, 2001-02 is a season where they're signing Sol Campbell. So Sol Campbell joins on a free transfer, Richard Wright, Francis Jeffers, Giovanni Van Bronckhorst, Junichi Inamoto from Gamba Osaka, Kolo Touré, and Stathis Tavlaridis. That's a player that's...
Signed centre-back, Stathis Tavlaridis, I think.
Let's see what your knowledge is like. Yes, centre-back, Greek. One appearance for Arsenal, on loan to Portsmouth. Bit of Lille, bit of, you know, French. nickname Toro in France, which means the ball, due to his aggressive style of play. Nice.
Yeah.
Do you remember one? There's a Brazilian got squad number 57 signed for Arsenal.
Nope.
Left back. So I didn't play for Arsenal. I loaned him Millwall, but then kind of, yeah, that was a failed. Yeah, two caps for Brazil, but that, it very much went back to Brazil. Played three league matches and one league cup match for Millwall. Oh. Apparently ACL. Did his ACL, which effectively ended his career then. Right. Yes, 0102 is where they... Is that Invincibles here?
0102 is double, isn't it? Another double.
Yeah, it's 0304 is Invincibles. Which, you look at all of that. So Invincibles comes in 0304. They win 26, draw 12, and lose 0. And if it's no, I mean, there's obviously, I mean, it's fantastic. Probably one of the greatest seasons, because it just becomes such a kind of target on your back, doesn't it? And I'm not. I don't quite remember the media at that point. It already wasn't a rolling 24/7 media at that point, where it's, you know, and all the stats-driven stuff. So I'm not quite sure how much it ran down to people's throats that they're unbeaten. They're unbeaten. They're unbeaten. I imagine it's still going to be pretty strong in terms of that kind of narrative, because it's just the pressure builds. You see how clubs, you know, see Arsenal this season, just kind of that, the pressure elements, just kind of, even just winning a title becomes pressure. But it's going to be this fantastic. But the point I'm making, kind of, games won. They won the title with 25 games a couple of times, and what, games won. So 26 years, just a number of draws, but still.
I think my thing is always, when you do an achievement like that and people try and belittle it, it shows how good it is.
Like, you're scraping around something, aren't you?
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, well, you draw 12 games. Yeah, but that's not the point. We didn't lose a single game in 38-game season. It's absolutely crazy. It's so good. It was so good. Only bettered by the treble. I do think the treble is better than an unbeaten season. Because an unbeaten season ultimately just wins you the league, and a treble is winning the league and two other trophies. So,
and where would you rank kind of Man City seasons, where they're scoring hundreds of points and points total? No?
Doesn't matter. Like, I think points total, to me, becomes less than an unbeaten season, which comes less than a treble. Especially the only ever unbeaten season is definitely better than any sort of points haul, I think.
Apart from Preston North End, who did it in
the
1800s.
Yeah. Yeah. But, of course, like, it was around this era, wasn't it, that they started talking about demolishing Highbury? Well, I know it's demolished, but they kept the clock tower because my friends bought a flat there who are Arsenal fans. So I stood in the area where Thierry Henry scored that flick volley goal over Barthez. Can you remember that one?
Yeah,
they took me to that point and was like, oh, this is where Thierry Henry scored that goal, in the park, sort of inside of the flats that are there, the internal garden bit. But yeah, that's obviously something we should touch on, right? Because Wenger was pretty big behind that in terms of
modernising. Yeah, I mean, you've already mentioned the fact they used some of the transfer fee to build a training ground. And apart from Alex Ferguson, kind of real length of time, Arsene Wenger really transformed Arsenal completely, didn't he? And he owned it all. And he stood by it. He could have left when, you know, the transfer funds have dried up and he's having to, you know, pay off the debt around the stadium. But he stuck with them and wanted to do that. And it's fantastic. I mean, Highbury was an excellent stadium. I don't think I've quite felt that with new stadiums. You know, Emirates doesn't quite.
It's tough. I think the older stadiums always have fond memories for us that grew up, right? Like, with them there. But I think if you ask the modern day fan looking at photos, they'll be like, of course the Emirates is better. Like, if someone that's not a modern day fan, you know what I mean? Someone that's more recent supporting football and following football. Because I went to Highbury and I saw Arsenal Liverpool there with my brother and my dad, because a mate had tickets. And it was a really good stadium. It was a really, really good stadium. And it's part of I'm a little bit concerned about Old Trafford. Like, part of me is like, it would be lovely to have a nice new modern stadium. But I'm also like, just, can we not just keep renovating it and keep the feel of it the same? And it's a tough situation, because so many clubs now don't have that stadium that we grew up with them in. I mean, Everton are going to move, Newcastle have got theirs, Villa Park's the same, Old Trafford, obviously you guys have moved, Arsenal have moved, Man City have moved, Liverpool are at Anfield, but it's practically going to be a new stadium by the time they finish building everything on it. It's really concerning, but I don't want to sound old, like a fuddy-duddy.
No, I know, because it's just the start of another journey, isn't it, really?
Yeah, exactly.
These stadiums will eventually be old, and they'll have lots of history in, and it's just the dawn of a new era.
Yeah, very true. That's a very much more positive way of looking at it. So, and then I think you touched on it before, right? Two European finals that they got to. The Champions League final against Barcelona.
Yeah, and that, I think that's got to be really tough. I think there's probably Arsenal fans have similar feelings to that as I do with such an early key decision going against you. And I probably disagree more with the Tottenham decision. This is Sissoko's handball where it's at the armpit. But this was, I mean, had such an erratic goalkeeper in
Jens Lehmann.
Yeah. Comes storming out and concedes a free kick, gets sent off. 18th minute, gets sent off. It leaves what ifs. Doesn't it? It's kind of, and I'd say that's the tarnish on Wenger's era at Arsenal. Obviously, won lots of league titles, lots of FA Cups.
Yeah.
Not Europe, are there any happy memories in Europe?
Well, I mean, getting to the finals is pretty good, but yeah, the the squads they assembled, you'd think they like they probably would have beaten that Barcelona team as well. 11-on-11, I think. I think they probably would have beaten them. I'm not saying that Barcelona team was rubbish, but yeah, I think.
No, so this is 6 years after the World Cup final. So you've got Jens Lehmann, Eboué, Touré, Campbell, Cole, Fleb, Fabregas, Gilberto, Pires, Lundberg, Henri. Against Valdez, Olivier, Marquez, Puyol, Van Bronckhorst, Edmilson, Deco, Van Bommel, Ronaldinho, Eto, Juli. It definitely is a beatable Barcelona side. And so yeah, they obviously took the lead. So Campbell.
I remember it fondly, Josh. It's the most money I've ever won on a single football match through betting.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. So I had a player to get sent off, Arsenal to score first and lose, Barcelona to score one or more goals. A defender to score, all in this single game.
Blimey, bet builder.
And I bet, yeah, it was. Unfortunately, it wasn't an accumulator. Yeah, it wasn't an accumulator. Barcelona to win, and I had Barcelona to win. But yeah, I had like six or seven bets on, and five of them came in, and it was lovely stuff. Lovely, lovely stuff.
Yeah, because you look here at the seasons, and so right, being a Champions League runner-up in 05-06, it then just seems to just fall away. At round of 16, just consistently that point. So semi-finals, is that an Arsenal Man United? Is that the semi-final?
Yeah,
that would have been the breakaway goal from Ronaldo or Park or Rooney. One of those lot finished, didn't they? Yeah, and that's Villarreal in the quarterfinals.
It's quite interesting. I'm just looking at something that was written about them in 2006 by a Guardian journalist. Two matches into the league season, the most watchable side and frequently the most frustrating side are Arsenal. They're wonderfully incisive yet infuriatingly blunt up front. In that era, 2006, that still would have been Henri, right?
2006 would have been Joe. He left at the end of 2006. That's Robin van Persie joins, but that's not peak Robin van Persie.
No, okay.
Van Persie then joined by Adebayor and van Persie.
Eduardo? Good. Or was he later?
Eduardo. That's Eduardo the randomly...
Croatian-Brazilian.
Yeah, Eduardo da Silva. And who was the really tall Birmingham defender? Martin Taylor?
Martin Taylor, yeah.
Yeah, so 07 to 10 is signed from Dinamo Zagreb. Is his time at Arsenal.
That 2006-2009... 10 period, there's a big change of players, isn't there? Because that's when Ashley Cole leaves, they sign Theo Walcott, Henri's gone, Adebayor's there, I think, at that time. They got Eduardo, Flamini is in, Galas is in and then out, and he was captain and then not captain with William Galas and all that stuff. Yeah, it was...
Because Arsenal, I think, from an outside looking at it, it seemed like quite fair in letting their star players leave.
Yeah.
Didn't seem to. So we got obviously Fabregas leaving, got Henri leaving, Patrick Vieira left, Van Persie left. It seemed like, I mean, there was a spate of Man City signing, like Adebayor, Clichy, Sanya.
Yeah.
It feels like they never really kept held on hostage, but it just seemed to always, and quite often, Wayne, it very much resonates with me, that selling an excellent player for big money, but the signing you bring in, just and maybe just the feel around the club, just doesn't quite. It doesn't accelerate it, it's decelerating.
I don't know if it was the same year when they sold Nasri, but it was either the same year or the year after they sold Nasri and then they bought in Yossi Benayoun. Can you remember that stint? I don't know if it was the same season.
Let's have a look.
Yeah, it was very, very interesting to see when they did that, because that was sort of like, okay, you are literally selling money to bring in, selling players to bring in money for the stadium. To pay
it
off.
Is, so yeah, 11-12 season.
Yeah.
So Sam and Nasri joins at the end of 2011 to Man City, and then Benayoun actually just joins on loan.
Oh, 11-12, that'll be... Yeah, it's literally right here on the page in front of me. Going back a year before that, the 2010-11 season, that's when they lost the League Cup final to Birmingham. Can you remember that?
Obafemi Martins.
Yeah.
Nicholas Zigic.
It was proper big man, little man system, wasn't it?
Yeah, so we had Szczesny, Koscielny, Giroud, Sanya, Clichy, Jack Wilshere, Alex Song, Sam Nasri, Thomas Rosicki, Andre Sharvin and Van Persie. So, you know, good Arsenal side. Yeah. But we're facing Ben Foster, Stephen Carr, Roger Johnson, Martin Jirinek, Liam Ridgewell, Sebastian Larsson, former Gunner, Barry Ferguson. Wow, this is a name I haven't thought about a long time. Kevin Fahey, F-A-H-E-Y?
Nope.
Craig Gardner, Lee Bowyer, and Nicolas Zikic, with John Beausejour, Cameron Jerome, and Obafemi Martins all coming on later in the game.
How did that team beat Arsenal?
Bench for Birmingham.
How did that team beat Arsenal?
Yeah. Marouane Chamakh and Nicholas Bentner came on for Arsenal.
Bloody hell. Yeah, and then you get into the thing where Van Persie leaves and joins Man United, with his reasons being that he was disillusioned with Arsenal's transfer policy, as it says. I'm just reading off Wikipedia, Arsenal fans, before you get angry at me. And they purchased Olivier Giroud and Podolski in anticipation of the Van Persie sale. So, what are your thoughts? I mean, other than being a very, very attractive man, what's your thoughts on Olivier Giroud?
A very good player, but not world-class in his own right. I think he's very good at kind of creating better players around. He's very good at his hold-ups, great. His one-touch off, and he's dangerous in the box. But I think he needs really good players around him to, again, it gets the best out of him.
Yeah, I really like Olivier Giroud.
Yeah, he's not going to create by himself, but he really does link other players. He's got the touch around him to kind of be perfect. So I'm a fan, yeah. I think he's always a good player. Yeah.
And then Lukas Podolski, other than a bullet of a left foot.
Yeah, I don't like him. He was too abrasive for me, and he was so inconsistent. He felt like the shot technique was there. It kind of similar to me, in my memory of Roman Pavlyuchenko.
Okay, yeah.
Like, he would score a fantastic goal. He seemed like he was quite quick and direct, but it just didn't really match up. Great international goal scoring record.
Yeah, I think, let's have a quick...
I think he might even still be playing, Lukas Podolski.
Lukas Podolski is still playing for Gomyk Zabrze, wherever that is.
I think he scored from a halfway line the other week.
Oh, nice. At 37. He's not actually that. 37. He's our age. Well, no, he's not. He's a year older than us. He's a bit older than us.
Yeah, 130 appearances, 49 goals for Germany.
He's 6 foot. I always thought he was tiny.
Did you? No. He started quite young. So Podolski had shown what he could do, scoring 10 goals in his first 19 senior appearances. This was the best tally by an 18-year-old in the history of Bundesliga until Florian Wirtz overtook the record in 2021.
Nice.
For Invert at Leverkusen, I think.
And then we're pretty much into the getting into the Wenger out era.
Yeah, and there's a lot. I mean, yeah, it's a horrible Batson era, isn't it?
Yeah, it's horrible. It is not very nice.
But you can see it. So this table showing kind of the silvers for. So you have the spate of 96 to 2004, where they finish third in his first season. It's first, second, 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 first, second, first, second. And then we go fourth, third, second. Rogue second. Oh, that second's the Leicester title-winning season, I think.
Right, yeah, okay.
Where Arsenal were kind of leading not rewrite history, but Arsenal were leading kind of this stage of the season, kind of, you know, two-thirds way through. They fade away. Tottenham apply pressure. Is that right? Leicester win, Tottenham fade away, Arsenal finish second. I mean, it's kind of sinners, Tottenham finishing second or third in a two-horse race. But Arsenal are definitely there or thereabouts in that 15-16 season. But then we go fifth, sixth, fifth, eighth, eighth, fifth, and with a spattering of cup wins during that time. But you can see, like, it's amazing. Arsenal haven't appeared in the Champions League since 2016-17.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And something horrific would have had to happen this season if they're not going to do that. They're currently leading the way after 25 games.
Yeah. I mean,
it became Bayern Munich smashing them, didn't it, the Champions League?
Yeah, it did. I do remember that, yeah. It was an interesting thing because obviously when Arsenal was started to... Well, they were going to leave Highbury and move to the Emirates, and that whole period started is exactly when Abramovich bought Chelsea. And there was just this big turning of the tide in terms of powerhouse in London. And that obviously equates to it a little bit because Chelsea came out of like not being in the top four to suddenly being in it, which sort of just pushed Arsenal into that third, fourth sort of category. But it's just as you go through down the down the pages, the bit of the page before he leaves, and then you get to the point. It says, in mid-2017, Wenger brought in two new signings, Alexandre Lacazette for a fee of £45 million to be the club's most expensive signing, and Kolasinac on a free. And that's the two signings he made. It's like, oh, that is tough. That is tough.
The last two games that Arsenal played in the Champions League are 2-5-1 losses to Bayern Munich.
Oh.
So they lost 10-2 on aggregate.
Ouch. Yeah, that is not good. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang joins for a club record fee of £56 million. And Arsene Wenger concluded his tenure with a 1-0 away win against Huddersfield Town. Wenger later revealed that he wanted to stay at the club until his contract expired, but the club thought it better he leave, with the board informing him in January of their decision to end his contract at the end of the season. He described the hostility he faced from the board and fans as unjustified and his exit as very hard and very brutal.
So, the two greats of the Premier League managerial era, we have Arsene Wenger and Alex Ferguson.
Yeah.
And how do you think them both have fared with their transition since then? So Arsenal have had Unai Emery was the immediate successor to Arsene Wenger, but I suppose Wenger had managed the decline, whereas Ferguson went out on a high.
Yeah.
They had, I think Freddie Ljungberg was a caretaker for a while, now we've got Mikel Arteta. Man United went to Moyes, Van Gaal, Jose, yeah. Ole, and now Ten Hag.
Or something in between. Oh no, Ralph Rangnick.
Yeah.
I feel like both teams have not managed it very well, but very different styles of how they've got to where they are now. Because obviously Fergie basically appointed Moyes, and I don't think Arsenal really had a plan after Wenger. It was more, this is so toxic from the fans, without blaming the fans, but this the feeling around the club was getting so toxic, we just need to have a change. I don't think they really knew where they wanted to go. Moyes was basically appointed by Fergie. It didn't work out. Valhau, we went for a track record of winning. Didn't really work out, although won the FA Cup. Sacked unfairly after winning the FA Cup. Went for another thing of win at all costs with Mourinho. Didn't really work. Went for the cuddly approach of Ole. Started to work. Then went for, not really sure who he wanted, so appointed a sporting director, and then landed on Ten Hag, which is amazing. Arsenal, still, it does surprise me that Arteta got the job with no previous management experience, given that it's still Arsenal. They're still a huge club, right? It's still a huge, huge club. But they were in a position, right, that they could afford to do that. Like, it's similar to, I guess, Man United with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. It was a positional thing where you weren't in the Champions League. So, when Ole got appointed, they were in the Champions League. But in the league, they were nowhere near qualifying for it. And I think it's a very interesting situation that they both got to the same place. But I don't know. Man United were quite ruthless with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and got rid of him when it started to go bad. Arsenal sort of got through that phase with Arteta, I would say. And now they're reaping the rewards of a bit of continuity.
Yeah, I'd say Arsenal seemed like they've just been all joined up and really just fully, like, a very rare occasion in Premier League football, they backed a manager and fully backed him.
Yeah.
It looks like it's going to pay off.
It does look like it's going to pay off, yeah. It does look like it's going to pay off, keeping him there and keeping it in. And that's probably a nice little phrase to end on, Josh. I think we'll do that. A lovely discussion. I've really enjoyed that discussion with, and not too many tangents. It was all sort of focused around Arsenal and Arsene Wenger, which is pretty good. But yeah, this was actually a listener recommended sort of episode to do, discussion to have, Arsene Wenger and Arsenal sort of earlier years. So yeah, it was really good. So get your recommendations in. You can find us on Twitter. You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all your good reputable audio devices, I guess. But thank you so much for listening. We will catch you in the next one next week for another discussion. But for now, we're out. Cheers.